This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 96 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm calling an audible today. I'm checking out of a run on 4th-and-1 and throwing it 15 yards down the field to Juju Smith-Schuster against the best secondary in football. On this episode, I'd planned on talking about some of my biggest hits in fantasy football this year, walking through the process on how those hits came about. I had talked about the misses last week, so following it up with a hits podcast just made sense. That is, until the divisional round of the NFL playoffs happened. ICYMI, we've got our final four for the NFL playoffs. And the quarterbacks for those four teams feature two ex-Jeff Fisher signal callers and a guy who's been trashed for poor play since he's entered the league. And then there's Tom Brady, who we know is arguably and probably the greatest quarterback of all time. This has led to a lot of takes, not just about those specific quarterbacks, but about the league in general. Because Case Keenum, Nick Foles, and Blake Bortles are playing in their conference championship games, there's a common thought floating around that the passing era in the NFL is over. You no longer need to be a passing team in the NFL to win. Now, de-emphasizing passing can happen in a lot of ways. When people say that passing doesn't matter like it did, say, 4 years ago in the NFL, we have no idea if they're talking about throwing for volume or throwing for efficiency. Those are obviously two very different ideas. In 2017, passing volume was different. We saw 17,488 pass attempts this past year, which was the lowest mark hit since 2011. The quarterback who led the league in pass attempts, which was Tom Brady, finished the year with 581 attempts. The last time we saw a player lead the league with fewer than 581 pass attempts happened in 2004. Trent Green did it, you remember him? So by strictly looking at volume, things trended downward this year passing-wise, but does that really mean that the league is no longer in this pass-friendly era? When you take a step back, it actually makes a lot of sense as to why teams didn't throw the ball all that much this year. Andrew Luck was hurt and the Colts went from 584 pass attempts last year to 487 this year. Aaron Rodgers was hurt and the Packers went from 620 attempts last year to 562 this year. Carson Wentz was injured towards the end of the year and the Eagles actually dropped almost 50 attempts from 2016 to 2017. Deshaun Watson tore his ACL. The Texans were throwing the ball a ton with Deshaun Watson, and they actually ended the year with 60 fewer attempts than they had last season. Carson Palmer was sent to injured reserve, and the Cardinals had about 50 fewer passing attempts this season as compared to last year. I mean, all of those differences really start to add up. It was a bad year for quarterbacks staying healthy. We know this. So maybe it's not all that shocking that across the league, pass attempts fell by 807 from 2016 to 2017. Now, I also don't think that pure volume is the way that we should determine whether or not we're still in this pass-friendly phase of the league or not. We're smart enough to know that game script is a thing in the NFL, and when you're trailing, you're throwing. It's why statistics that get shoved down your throat when you watch a game on TV like, this team hasn't lost when they run the ball 30 plus times in a game this year, is complete garbage. They're running the ball a lot because they have the lead. They have the luxury of being able to run the ball. The best passing teams aren't also throwing the ball the most. It's why anytime someone starts to cite counting statistics in an argument about anything football related, you should immediately question their beliefs. Having the most yards has just as much to do with opportunity as it does effectiveness. In 2017, the teams who ranked in the top five in pass attempts were the Giants, 49ers, Buccaneers, Dolphins, and Cardinals. None of those teams made the playoffs. And for the record, the reason the Patriots aren't number one while Tom Brady led the league in pass attempts is because so many teams didn't start one quarterback throughout the season this year. In 2016, the leaders in pass attempts were Baltimore, New Orleans, Arizona, Jacksonville, and Green Bay. Of those teams, only Green Bay made the playoffs. The reason I bring this up is because this lack of making the playoffs while throwing the ball a lot isn't unique to 2017. It happens all the time because bad teams throw the ball more because bad teams are trailing more often. When people say it's a passing league, they don't just mean it in terms of volume. Yes, there are more passes now than there were in 1995, but this is also about efficiency. It's about what happens every time a quarterback drops back to pass. And this is where the analytics come into play. At NumberFire, we've got an expected points model that we call net expected points. If you guys don't fully understand how these expected points models work, I'll just do a brief rundown. Basically, every yard line and down and distance on a football field has some expected points value. If it's first and 10 on the 50, a team would be expected to score a certain amount of points on that drive at that point in time. If a team then throws an incomplete pass, that expected point total naturally drops because it's now 2nd and 10 on the 50. The quarterback throwing that pass is then credited with a negative expected points play. All of those little changes in expected points then can be added up to generate a player or team's net expected points. That's why the word net is there. The reason looking at something like this is better or more accurate than counting statistics is because counting statistics put zero context around the throws. Like, let's say that it's 3rd and 15 and a quarterback throws the ball for 16 yards. That's far more impactful of a throw than a 16-yard gain on 3rd and 20. One of those throws picks up a first down, while the other one results in either a punt or a field goal attempt. Our expected points model at NumberFire dates back to the year 2000. That year, each dropback resulted in 0.00 expected points, meaning a typical dropback really had no impact on the game. A rush, though, had an expected point output of minus 0.06. Defenses were dominating the league back then, but passing was generating roughly 0.06 more points per play than rushing was. And that's how it's been throughout net expected points history. In fact, the gap between passing efficiency and rushing efficiency has actually grown as the years have gone on. Back then, the difference was 0.06. In 2015, that gap was 0.15. In 2016, it was 0.14. This year, that expected point difference between a pass and a rush dropped back down to 0.07. Passing was not as efficient as it was in the past, and rushing was slightly better than what we'd seen over the last couple of seasons. So this, combined with the fact that teams threw the ball less, is precisely why everyone's screaming that the passing league notion is over. It's done. But here's the thing, guys. Even in what you could consider a down year due to all the quarterback injuries and the awful passers who were starting for teams, each dropback was still giving you an edge compared to each rush. A fairly significant edge, too. And the other piece to this is that rushing net expected points numbers really, really favor quarterbacks. And it kind of makes sense as to why, intuitively. Think about a normal NFL game and when you watch a team run with their running back. You often see 1, 2, or 3 yards gained over and over and over again. It happens all the time. That's what makes rushing so inefficient. It's not that it's irrelevant. It's just that it's not an efficient way, usually, to score points consistently. But when you see a quarterback run the football, he's scrambling for large chunks of yards. That's why in 2017, the top two players in rushing net expected points were Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott. Number three was Alvin Kamara, then Tyrod Taylor, and then Deion Lewis. But among the top 13 players in rushing net expected points, 11 of them were quarterbacks. Now, this isn't to say that you should just go out there and only throw the ball because there's such a significant gap between passing and rushing effectiveness. You still need some semblance of balance on the team, and personnel can dictate a lot of this as well. But to ignore this type of data when claiming that the league no longer is in this pass-friendly era just doesn't make any sense. Perhaps you're taking this data as the start of a trend. Again, passing volume was down, as was passing efficiency. But there are some obvious reasons for that, mostly being the fact that starting quarterbacks throughout the NFL this year were objectively trash. I already listed all the guys who were injured this season. That's not going to help things. Now, through all of this, the biggest point that needs to be made here might be the fact that the NFL has a small sample size game and a single elimination tournament can push forth loads and loads of variance. Had Stefon Diggs not caught that pass, had the Vikings not made history with an epic walk-off touchdown, then we might not even be talking about this today. Because the Final Four would feature teams with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and one of the other two remaining squads certainly didn't get there because of their backup quarterback. This is the single greatest thing that people don't understand with the intersection between football and math. They take single game examples and make their cases with those single game examples. When someone says you need good quarterback play to win in the NFL, people who disagree say, oh, well then how did Peyton Manning win his Super Bowl with the Broncos or Eli against the Patriots? Defense, baby. And they're not wrong. Defenses won those championships for those respective teams. The Broncos defense was historic when Manning won the Super Bowl, and the Giants knew how to play against that New England offense. But that's the issue in looking at single game samples. Matchups can dictate so much, and variance is so much greater versus looking at a larger sample size. In other words, we shouldn't simply look at the remaining teams and say, see how you win in the NFL this year? I mean, the Steelers could have easily beat the Jaguars in the divisional round. It was one of the worst coached games that I've ever witnessed from a decision-making perspective. But the Steelers could easily right now be sitting in the AFC Championship. They're not because the Jags did what they had to do to win, but let's not pretend that that game wasn't close. If one play goes the Steelers' way, let's say that Ben isn't strip-sacked and the Jags don't score the defensive touchdown, we're looking at a different game. And like I said, Stefon Diggs caught a prayer at the end of the game to win for the Vikings. Had the Saints played even average defense on that play, New Orleans is sitting in the conference championship. And then what happens if Julio Jones catches that end zone ball at the end of the Falcons-Eagles game? No, guys, I know. These are all ifs. I get it. And I'm not taking anything away from Philly, Jacksonville, or Minnesota and the fans of those teams. Those three squads being in the conference championship round is well deserved. I'm merely pointing out that if one play goes a different way, this narrative is squashed. Because then you'd have Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger in the semifinals. You'd have three Hall of Fame quarterbacks and a damn good one in Matt Ryan. And here's the thing that no one wants to really talk about too. Of the remaining teams, each one was at least above average in passing efficiency this season. Yes, even Jacksonville. According to NumberFire's expected points model, when you adjust for strength of opponent, all four teams ranked in the top 12 in per dropback efficiency this year. New England was first, Minnesota was fifth, Philly was sixth, and Jacksonville was 12th. Tom Brady was fifth in adjusted net yards per attempt, Case Keenum was 7th, Blake Bortles was 15th, Carson Wentz, who played the majority of the season for Philly, was 6th. And that Wentz thing is something that I really want to talk about. Just because Carson Wentz isn't playing anymore this year doesn't mean we should strictly look at Nick Foles' stats and say, see, you don't need a good quarterback to make it to the conference finals. Nick Foles and the Eagles didn't need to do a whole lot to lock up a first-round bye after Carson Wentz's injury, you guys. And Nick Foles' offense didn't move the ball all that well in the divisional round. And again, the Eagles were a play away from losing. Carson Wentz is still a huge reason that the Eagles are in the position that they are right now. He helped them get home field advantage, and he was one of the best passers in the league before going down. And also, guys, not to mention, the best two pass defenses in the NFL this season are in the conference championship. Jacksonville and Minnesota were the best teams at stopping the pass this year, and they made it. Maybe Jacksonville had an odd way of getting there given their performance in the divisional round, but the pass defense was a huge reason that they were even in that position in the first place. What is this Jacksonville team without that secondary? And then what's interesting is also what happens when you look at the playoffs as a whole. 8 of the top 10 teams in schedule-adjusted passing efficiency according to NumberFire's metrics made the playoffs this year. The only teams that didn't were the Chargers, who were incredibly close to getting in, and Detroit, who were also close to getting in. Of the four remaining playoff teams that weren't in the top 10, Jacksonville ranked 12th, Carolina was 16th, Tennessee was 25th, and Buffalo was 29th. And you could make a real argument that the only reason Tennessee and Buffalo were even in the playoffs this year was because the AFC was so weak. Meanwhile, 5 of the top 10 teams in rushing efficiency made it. And get this, of all the playoff teams, only Tennessee, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Carolina, and Jacksonville, that's 5 playoff teams, ranked in the top 22 in rush defense efficiency. Meanwhile, 8 of the top 15 teams in pass defense efficiency were playoff teams. In other words, playoff teams this year were teams who were efficient at stopping the pass and efficient at throwing the ball. Look, guys, the only reason we're sitting here today talking about this is because of names. Case Keenum is a journeyman backup. Blake Bortles has been made fun of since he entered the league. Nick Foles has been awful since his historic 2013 campaign. But guys, Case Keenum was good this year. The Vikings threw the ball really effectively. And Nick Foles isn't the one who got the Eagles to this point. Carson Wentz was. If Carson Wentz were healthy, do you think the Eagles would be underdogs this week? Of course not. The Eagles would probably be Super Bowl favorites. Why? Because passing matters. Quarterbacks matter. Metrics tell us this. Process tells us this. Just because the results are what they are doesn't mean we should start screaming that passing isn't as important in today's NFL as it was in 2012. All the while, it's really awesome to see what's happening in the NFL happen. This season wasn't the greatest one from a product standpoint. Quarterbacks were bad, and that really hurt the NFL product. But watching Case Keenum throw that touchdown to Stephon Diggs and then lead the Vikings crowd in the skull chant while waiting for the Saints to come back from the locker room for that extra point, that was amazing. And Case Keenum deserved that after playing incredibly efficient football this year. Yes, I said incredibly efficient quarterback play, because Case Keenum has been great. That's going to be it for today's show. Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoyed a little change of pace. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, please do so by going to Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And please, if you have mailbag questions, hit me up on Twitter at LateRoundQB or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll be back on Friday with another mailbag episode. Take it easy.